In 1842 CE, the British Consul General in Morocco wrote a letter to the Sultan to ask him if he had taken any measures to stop slavery, or at least slave trade. The Sultan replied that he did not do anything about it because it had been the norm since the time of the Sons of Adam, and no sects of Islam are against it. Hence, he will not permit anything that the Quran forbids and will not make anything unlawful that the Quran has allowed. In the Sultan's reply, we see the simplest justification, or at least excuse, for almost 1300 years of slavery in the Islamic world. This video is part of a bigger collaboration between various YouTube history channels on the topic of Africa. Don't forget to watch the video before this one by Stefan Milo on the Swahili culture. First of all, I've chosen to call this trade the Arab slave trade because Arabs were a key part of this network. Arabs weren't the only people involved in this trade, but still, most of the rulers and raiders involved in the process were Arabs. Most of the important markets were in Arab cities as well. I didn't call it the East African slave trade because it wasn't just done through East Africa. Other trade routes were involved as well. Slavery was already practiced in Arabia and most of the areas that the Muslims conquered in the 7th and 8th centuries. Islam did not abolish slavery, but some regulations were set which were increased upon by the caliphs. There were four ways someone could end up a slave. First, a child born to slave parents was a slave. Secondly, someone captured in a jihad against non-Muslims could be made a slave. Third, a slave could be purchased. Or finally, a slave could be given as a tribute. The people living under Islamic rule, Muslim or non-Muslim, could not be enslaved unless they rebelled or they helped an enemy of the state. Bernard Lewis writes, "Slaves were excluded from religious functions or from any office involving jurisdiction over others. Their testimony was not admitted at judicial proceedings. In penal law, the penalty for an offense against a person, a fine or bloodwit, was for a slave, half of that for a free man. While maltreatment was deplored, there was no fixed penalty. In what might be called civil matters, the slave was a chattel with no legal powers or rights whatsoever. He could not enter into a contract, hold property, or inherit. If he incurred a fine, his owner was responsible. He was, however, distinctly better off in the matter of rights compared to a Greek or a Roman slave, since Islamic jurists, and not only philosophers and moralists, took down accounts of humanitarian considerations. They laid down, for example, that a master must give his slave medical attention when required, must give him adequate upkeep, and must support him in his old age. If a master defaulted on these and other obligations to his slave, the Qadi could compel him to fulfill them, or else either to sell or emancipate the slave. The master was forbidden to overwork his slave, and if he did so to the point of cruelty, he was liable to a penalty which was, however, discretionary and not prescribed by law. A slave could enter into a contract to earn his freedom, in which case his master had no obligation to pay for his upkeep. While in theory the slave could not own property, he could be granted certain rights of ownership, for example, for which he paid a fixed sum to his master." In the Islamic world, various ethnicities were enslaved, not just people of African descent. In fact, they were all considered to have their own advantages. Ibn Battlan, in his handbook, tries to characterize them. He recommends Indians and Nubians as guards of persons or property, as laborers, servants, and eunuchs, he recommends Zanj, and as slaves, Turks and Slavs. Yes, even white people could be enslaved. However, there was a distinction between them. The white slaves were called Mamluk, or owned, and the black slaves were called Abd, which means slave. Where white slaves could rise up to respectable positions, the black slaves could not. The Mamluks had their own dynasties in Egypt and India, but the Abd slaves never did. In fact, even in literature or poetry, we hardly find an example of a black man, slave or otherwise, after the Umayyads. Even free Muslim people weren't all treated fairly across the Muslim world, but as always, there were exceptions. An early chronicler, Jashiari, writes an anecdote about a man called Abdulhamid, who was apparently the secretary of the last Umayyad caliph. The story goes that the caliph had received a gift of a black slave from a provincial governor. The caliph was unhappy with him and told his secretary to write a letter of gratitude and disparagement. Abdulhamid wrote, "Had you been able to find a smaller number than one and a worse color than black, you would have sent that as a gift." This story, along with many others, show that Arabs didn't view African slaves particularly nicely and preferred other ethnicities if they could get them. Even in the times of Prophet Muhammad, Byzantine and Persian slaves were found in Arabia. Africans were just one of various slaves available. However, over time, the number of black slaves grew disproportionately. Main reason for that was the stabilization of the frontiers. Turks and Indians started to embrace Islam, and so not many of them could be enslaved. And as jihad slowed down after the 8th century, so did the number of non-white slaves. Mostly against Byzantine and other European states, captured prisoners were ransomed or exchanged. While it's easy to say that the distinguishing factor between slaves and non-slaves was religion and not race, that's not all that true. The ruler of Bornu, for example, complained in a letter to the Sultan in Egypt about how the slave trades were ravaging Bornu and enslaving free men, even members of the ruler's family and Muslims. While it was forbidden to enslave Muslims, in practice, if you were a black Muslim, you could be enslaved. Very early on, the Muslims signed a treaty with Nubia, where Nubia would provide slaves in exchange for peace. This was probably the reason that Nubia was not taken over by the Muslims for quite a while. However, conquests across the Sahara opened trade routes across the African continent. And among the things transported across the routes were religion, ideas, and unfortunately, slaves. Muslim Arabs bought slaves from these routes all across northern Africa and brought them back into the Islamic heartland. This started almost right after the conquests and the subsequent stabilization of the frontiers. The coast of the Zanj, modern Kenya and Tanzania, was used by the Arabs to bring slaves to Yemen, and from there, Oman and the Persian Gulf, and cities like Basra and Baghdad is where they were sold to the Muslims. Somalis, before they were Islamized, were a large number of slaves imported, and later interior peoples were exported as slaves from the Somali coast across into Yemen, and from there via Mecca, Damascus, and Baghdad. In Mesopotamia, a large number of Zanj slaves were used in thousands of plantations and saltpeter mines. Apparently, the working conditions were so terrible that they revolted numerous times between 868 CE and 883 CE and became a serious threat to the Caliphate. This went on for centuries and became a system, but it wasn't as severe as it later grew into. At the time, various African tribes raided each other and enslaved the prisoners, selling them on the frontiers of the Islamic Empire. From here, Arabs took over and took these slaves inland to be sold on the borders, but also in India and across the Mediterranean. Unfortunately, the holiest site in Islamic world, Mecca, became a bustling market for slave trading. People bought slaves in this market when they visited for Hajj, the Islamic pilgrimage. Slaves were brought there as a commodity, which could be sold to get some cash. They were easier to protect than other precious commodity in a huge caravan, so people brought them along. People also brought them in Mecca, since people from all over the world would gather there. All the way up to 1962 CE, slaves were being sold in Mecca. In The Legacy of Arab Islam in Africa, John Elambila Azuma writes the following. The main area from which slaves were drawn and exported to Egypt and other North African Muslim locations, and then to the Islamic wider world, were the Central and Western Sudan. The traffic started mainly from Nubia, from which the people living to the south and east of Dongola were taken to Egypt. Slaves were exported also from Kanem-Borno via Fezzan to Cairo, Tripoli, and Kairouan. People groups living around the Lake Chad area were later exported along this route. While in the 18th and 19th centuries, Baghirmi slaves, especially eunuchs, formed an important part of the slave traffic along this route. Some were later sent from Tripoli to ports in modern Turkey, Greece, Albania, and southern Yugoslavia, which were all at the time under the Ottoman Empire. Slaves from the Middle Niger and the Atlantic coast were also drawn from Gao, Yavargla to Tahrir in modern Algeria, and Kairouan, and later from Timbuktu through Touat to Tlemcen, Sijilmassa, Fez, and other centers of the Muslim Maghreb, from where some passed into Muslim Spain and Sicily when it was under Muslim domination between the 9th and 11th centuries. Ibn Khaldun testifies to the presence of large slave populations in the 14th century North Africa when he wrote that the blacks constituted the ordinary mass of slaves. Muslim Berber groups of North Africa, like the Tuareg and the Moors, became the chief agents in the raiding and in the traffic of black slaves to North Africa, Spain, Turkey, and the Mediterranean world, some of whom were taken as far as India. As early as the 8th century, the Berber Ibadi community of North Africa virtually controlled the trade routes and thus the traffic in black slaves. Considering the terrible conditions on these routes and the increasingly predatory nature of the slave raids, one historian estimates that for every slave that was sold in the market, 10 had died on the way there. These raids were also labeled jihad by raiders to legitimize them. Neither the Muslim raiders nor the buyers of the slaves really cared about who the slaves were and where they came from. The Swahili coast became a bustling hub of slave trading. A network was established across the Indian Ocean and the Persian Gulf. In the 18th and 19th century, when ivory trade was on the rise, these slaves were also forced to carry ivory and other precious commodities on their ways to the markets by the raiders. It was during those centuries that the slave trade reached its peak. From around 1800 CE to 1850 CE, most European countries abolished slavery, and the slave trade started to die on the western side. However, on the east, it was picking up further. The British did try to have countries abolish it, but it didn't work. Not only did it not work, but it probably had the opposite effect. The colonization was taking place, and a lot of these countries exported slaves. Muslim Borno, for example, entered into a trade deal with the Ottoman Empire to provide them slaves. Muslim Africa ravaged the continent and raided deep into it. The stories of these raids are disturbing, to say the least. Most Muslim rulers of the region were interested in slavery because it was profitable. There weren't many advocating for abolition, even though in Europe slavery had mostly died out. The British could not force the rulers to do away with slavery. However, by the end of the 19th century, Africa was almost entirely colonized and the slave trade was put to an end. Muslim states of Middle East were breaking into chaos. The Ottoman Empire was the sick man of Europe. The Europeans were isolating countries that still practiced slavery. All these factors combined put a slow end to the slave trade by 1950 CE. It was outlawed in Saudi Arabia in 1962. However, slavery in some form is still practiced in various Muslim and African countries. From 1450 to 1850 CE, an estimated 12 million slaves were traded from Africa to the Americas. In around the same period, 5 million African slaves were traded by the Muslims. However, the Islamic trade existed for a much longer period than the European one, and the total number of slaves traded from 600 CE to 1900 is around 17 million. Thank you for watching this video. This video was just an overview of the Arab slave trade. More videos will follow. As I said before, it's part of a huge collaboration between many YouTube history channels on Africa. So don't forget to watch the video after it about the Great Zimbabwe by History Time. See you next time.